Welcome to this episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Allie Privet is now in New York. I am in a frozen tundra of Chicago area. How are you, Allie?
I'm well. I think this is going to be a cool coalescing of a podcast in terms of me being in a unique teaching environment this month, and you're frozen in teaching in Chicago, and we have some global perspectives and predictions that we're kind of excited to break down. But it'll be interesting to see, like, you know, I'm currently teaching an intensive course in upstate New York at Bard College. And so being in a classroom environment with, you know, young people who are I'm seeing very big differences in learning styles for the first time in many years. So to kind of dig into that in real time with someone who is on the other side of the pond and can kind of like shed light into ideas that we haven't maybe explored on this podcast. And I'm really interested to dig into them.
100%. Now, I've kept my eye on this person because we have very close like branding, but I love it. This is Melissa McBride. Hello, Melissa. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Awesome. Disrupt Ed, co-founder and CEO. Can you give us a little bit of background on who you are, kind of a brief history of your educational past, and then we're going to jump into some a spicy post. I think that's where we're going to go. So,
yeah, amazing. It's great to be here. So I'm Melissa McBride. I have started the Disrupt Ed movement. We'll talk about that a little bit, what it is. But at the end of the day, first of all, I'm from the other side of the pond. So you'll start me slipping into some Canadianisms, I'm sure, on the call. But I was a teacher. I was a school principal. I've opened schools around the world. I've innovated. I've been creative. I've been a maverick. And most recently, actually, the project that we find ourselves in is we run the UK's first and only Department for Education accredited online school. It's our lab. I say that not because anyone's a hamster, but because we get to incubate stuff and scale really amazing ideas with young people at the heart of, you know, what we do and why we do and how we do it. So I'm hearing that we're definitely dealing with a new generation. And I think that's why, right, disrupting this entire ecosystem is so important to the mission that we have as educators.
Excellent. Thank you so much again for being here. You know, there was a post, and here's, I'll just talk to the audience here for a moment. Obviously, I'm going to get into that online school and talking a little bit about that. But there was a, and it, I have the post in front of me, a spicy post alert. And when somebody says that, that's the greatest hook ever, because I'm like, let's go. And you made some predictions for 2024. Talk a little bit about, you know, why did you write predictions? And then we'll jump into those.
Yeah, so I'm really lucky that I see things from a lot of different lenses, right? I'm a mom of four. So my eldest is 14. So I have one Gen Alpha, Gen Z, and the rest Gen Alphas in my own house, being an educator, but also, you know, having worked within the ed tech sector as a founder for quite some time. So I see a lot of what's out there. And I think from an educator's point of view, being able to make some predictions based on like what the center is, like what are we seeing? What are we breathing with our teachers, with the educators that we work with the schools that we support? And then how do we bring in the sphere of what's happening with tech, right? And we've seen a huge wave. Mm-hmm. And will it impact, you know, on education? I hope so, but we have to do it the right way. So that's really where the spicy post kind of was initiated from. But you'll notice, right, like what number one is, because I think it's the most pressing challenge. It's also the biggest opportunity to kind of create some of these things. Yeah.
You want to just dive into number one and like
Let's
why
go.
It became number one? Like,
The global shortage crisis, the global teacher shortage crisis deepens. I'll read the rest of it. EdTech automation provides a stopgap, but quality issues persist. More consolidation and cost cutting likely. That's a big one.
Yeah, it is. But like a lot of what we hear in the education media is around the crisis in teachers, right? Mm-hmm. Like, teachers, I actually think we don't actually have a teacher crisis. What we have is a crisis in educators who are willing to continue to work in the classroom because their purpose is being eroded. You know, they're passionate about educating when they don't feel they do that, and their personal lives become turned upside down. And obviously then you add all the financial implications, right? Teachers are not well paid, but I think they do the most important job we have. So we have a crisis, not just in North America, not just in the UK, but globally. If you ask any international teacher on the circuit, it is incredibly difficult to recruit high quality, even harder to retain them. And like, that is a crisis that we're never, ever going to get back unless we start to address like some of the fundamental problems that we have in this traditional model. So EdTech is interesting, but I always like to think like EdTech's not new. It's been around for a long time. All we have is a different tool. We have a different whiteboard. And if we're not careful with things like AI, we're going to end up in the same place, right? So we're going to see a lot of consolidation. We're going to see, you know, schools having to make really, really tough decisions. We're already seeing that over here. I'm sure you're seeing it there. And actually, I think what we're going to need is the bright spark, which is more innovation, right? More creative thinking around how we disrupt our thinking about what schools do, how we do it, to build a future that the next generation deserve.
When you said to start off this podcast that we need to, or maybe you said it right before we started recording now, I can't remember, but you talked about like, in order to disrupt education, you have to integrate all spheres. And when this first kind of point on the post is, it's looking at that through the lens of like, it's just going to become a necessity rather than like this maybe choice. Though you started this first online accredited school, was that like, you know, like how long ago did you do that? And that was that started because you could kind of see where education was going and then kind of this anticipatory need for this type of school setting?
Yeah. So I guess some people have said, you know, Melissa, you kind of see around corners, which is good and bad, right? Like seeing around corners is problematic because it makes it really hard sometimes to initiate and, you know, drive your ideas forward. But it is really important. And the school came about really because of my own experience as a parent, a working parent, during COVID, right? So colleagues in schools, you know, they did what they had to do, right? But there was no training, there was no preparation. And the immediate default was, we just have to take everything we do in a traditional school and stick it online and hope that works. Like hope it gets us through this week, the next week. So again, blindsided, right? And not really thinking through what a quality experience looks like online, not having time to change the way that we do things so that it was fit for purpose. So I have more gray hair than I can share from not so much my eldest, but he was then 6, he's now 9, because he is your classic defector from school, right? He doesn't like the 6 hours and 48 minutes and how long he has to sit and he has to be quiet. You know, it's just not his makeup. So Sophia came about because of what we saw as the potential, right? The freedom, the flexibility, but having to incubate this in a way that was really designed for teaching online, not fitting, you know, the square peg in the round hole as we had to do. So that's where it came from. And really to do that, we ripped up the rule book. Like when I talk about disrupted thinking, I talk about like, you have to start from a blueprint that doesn't exist, like blue sky, right? How do we carry forth the things that matter, which really from my mind is, the single biggest thing is we prepare children for the future that doesn't exist, right? That is our job as educators. The rest is just noise. So how do we incubate and how do we build? We did a lot of design thinking, you know, everything from what skill set do our teachers need? What does the day look like? What platforms do we use? How many kids are in a class? What are the hours of the day? Like, what are we teaching? And that began this process back in 2020, really. Around incubating what would be an online school that feels like a global classroom, makes deep connections and accelerates learning, which is key for education, but actually breaks free of some of the shackles that the traditional system holds us to. So, and that was the starting point really. So my son, he was the best use case for the school because I was pulling my hair out, literally.
Right. When you're looking at all of these, there are a lot. I think you have, well, there's 20. What are some of the other highlights that you want to dive in? I will definitely connect this post to the notes to the podcast so everybody can see them. But what are some of the, I mean, I don't know if you rank them. Is that one, two, three, or is it just like, here is one. I mean, I love, two right away is the side hustles. Definitely. I think a lot of the educators have been, seeing the precarity of the side hustle becomes the creator economy. That's where we, have to, number one, make up wages. But for me, it was an out. Like I really want to do way more than I can do in a system. So I created the podcast. Ali and I have unbelievable conversations around this. We meet wonderful people like you, and it's kind of the out. We can continue to go through these. Is there one that you want to like highlight as well? The number one was a huge one.
Yeah, I think the key is there was some level of like how do we connect and how do we weave these together? I think it always comes back to people, right? And like we don't sign up to be teachers because we're chasing a big paycheck. We all know that, right? And I'm sure the audience knows that as well. So we do it for a greater sense of purpose. And when educators are leaving and you see a drain of incredibly talented, passionate people who just love connecting and who are no longer able to do that, they have two options. They will either find a way to stay inside, either because they they begin to hustle on the side if it's a financial decision, or they leave full-time teaching, but they incubate another idea. So the rise of these edupreneurs, right, who are actually taking their ideas, their solutions that they have never been listened to, maybe in the classroom, and they're pulling them forward. And tech is helping that, right? AI is helping to incubate more and more of it. So I think the key for me are always the ones that focus on the people, and then always the posts that come back to the center, which is what is the impact on learners? Far too often, I did another post around, why ed tech is so lame, which is funny because I'm a tech founder, but the whole point of it was is that if we don't center back on a high quality experience, and what we see often, especially when you tip into VC, is the chasing of the scale, you erode the quality piece. And like, I think those days are over. I think those days of, mass scale and mass numbers, but not quality, I'd like to think that they're over because educators are stepping into their power, whether they're creating, whether they're becoming, more personalities to tell the story, or they're incubating their own ventures. I think that is really what I see coming forward. And I do think that it's going to cause, the big tech groups to stop, pause, and to think about how they approach the next wave of what's coming in education. So yeah, I kind of moved around. I mean, the last ones are more around what I see as the big future, which is centered on hybrid, and we can unpack that for sure. But the others were more around, the people and the ideas that are percolating and how they're going to drive what happens here in 2024. Because I always said, even if you go back to posts a year ago, that education really is a sleeping giant, right? Like it's the one sector that is avoided mass change. And 2023 was really painful, right? It was when the pain not only was felt with those, I call them the blackboard jungle, those of us who stand in front of classrooms, right? But it began to become painful externally. And I think that's challenging, but it's a really good thing because only when you feel pain are you willing to change. And like we have a sector that's not globally, hasn't really changed the way it works since for 260 or more years, it's still very industrial factory feeling. And actually, it's failing young people in lots and lots of, scenarios. So those are it. But people always, like, I love the champion stories, right? Like the founders that have come out of education and they want to continue to make a difference, and that's what's fueling their fire for what they're building.
I'm really curious on the, the Sophia School, the online school that you developed, and in how it's maybe different than, what the experience that the pandemic threw effectively everyone into, because I know I'm seeing the effects of it in young people I'm around, the students that are in front of me currently, and anecdotally from other people's classroom of kind of the it's almost apathy, or it's to learning, like they're over learning in general from, or just being online, right? Or this kind of chaotic learning environment that kind of occurred. And so, because I'm feeling more resistance to online learning and kind of this renaissance of coming back in person, and yet you're developing an online school. So I see the need for that type of environment because of other constraints on the system. But how is it different than, you know, what people maybe associate with online learning?
Yeah, and I think it's a really important question to ask, because parents are resistant and so are the students, right? And if we unpack why, right? And we spend a lot of time speaking to the students and the families that join us. You know, why, what I would say is it maybe historically is the alternative. It's fast moving to the center, right? Especially when we start to look at the hybrid models. And interestingly enough, you know, homeschooling, I think at my last check was over 1% of all learners in the US, right? Like homeschooling is not a new concept in the right. In the US landscape. It is wider, you know, in some countries it's banned, you know, you're not allowed to do it. So, you know, the US are at the forefront of that. But when we talk about the environment we're speaking to, which is the online, right? There was extreme exhaustion from young people. There was frustration from families. There was a feeling of disconnect. And what we bring it all back to, certainly with the kids that we work with and the families, is, you know, why? So the why was because we expected young people to work within the same 8 a.m. in the morning till 3 p.m. and sit online, back-to-back lessons with similar class sizes, right? Like, I don't know what the average class size is in the U.S., you know, but we're pushing 30 here in the state sector.
Yeah, it's about right.
Here in the U.K., yeah. In the private sector, you know, my daughter does go to a private school, which is the right school for her. I think that's the other thing. It's not a one-size-fits-all, right? Everyone's different. Yep. And I appreciate that. So, you know, with hers, there's 28. So, you know, the thing about online is it only works when it can be engaging, when the content is interesting. Kids learn the tools super quickly, and like applying those skills through an inquiry-based or project-based, where you can actually spend a lot less time online and learn a lot faster because the learning is personalized and it's collaborative. You know, so when I talk about tearing up the rule book, what we don't tear up is the fact that our children need to work towards, you know, the English curriculum standards, the standardized tests that happen here, which is GCSE, right? Like that's still the flight path. We don't change that. But how we get them there is really different. So at Sophia High, you know, the kids have learning pods, we call them that, of 6 kids in a session. So everybody is seen, everybody's collaborative. There is no watching, listening lessons, they're all doing. And so we use amazing tools, like a lot of the Google Suite, we're a Google partner. The kids, even the 6-year-olds, know how to use Canva Education and can create, you know, they use VR. We're really finding ways to keep the levels of engagement high, because reactions per minute really, really matter. And people don't know that there are reactions per minute in even in this realm. So I'm speaking, so obviously I'm very clued in. You know, you guys are all listening, you're nodding. But if we had a massive group on here, right, reactions per minute, if they're just listening, will start to drop. And that was a very, very big problem. And then we expected kids, certainly in the UK, to like listen to the teacher during the live lessons, which followed the same timetable pattern as if they were in a physical school, but then carry that work outside, right? And that entire system just caused a lot of anguish, a lot of frustration. And actually, I think a lot of kids thinking, why am I doing this? Like, I could just learn this. Like, why am I having to be here? So we've really got to the heart of the problem, right? So for our school and our system, and kids are amazed. And by the way, a lot of the kids that we see initially are the ones who can no longer go to school. So what do I mean by that? Well, yes, they're ones that have been permanently excluded because they've hit the breaking point. They call it SEMH, which is basically mental health, anxiety. We've seen kids clinically depressed. We've kids seen bullied, you know, all sorts. And so that's usually in a good proportion of children that come to us from the UK, the starting point. And like immediately we turn it around because of the engagement, because of the interaction, because of actually meeting kids where they are. What tools do we need to use? What are they interested in? Like, we weave all of this through how we deliver what we do. And by the way, they're learning in half the time, less than that. So here, you know, you'd be in school for 6 hours and 48 minutes, according to the DFE. With ours, you know, they're online for four, maybe five if there's an assembly, you know, 40 minute with six kids, and they're really iterating quickly in a collaborative way. And then they take that outside. So we give them back their life. We give our teachers back their lives. You know, they have small groups that they deeply connect with, you know, and the kids connect. But what's key here is it's not a one-stop shop. By making time in the day to deal with this question of, yeah, but you do need to do things outside digital. And I wholeheartedly agree, but we give young people and their families back the time to do that. You're interested in art, you've now got the time to go and paint or to go and play football or to go and do the things and connect, because we've addressed what we're learning, how we're learning it, and the time it takes to do that. And I think that's been really, really key for us.
It's interesting because, number one, thank you for sharing that. That's a very different look at like hybrid and online that, you know, I think a lot of traditional educators struggle with, right? So just as an example, we are in a couple of cold days. We had some remote learning days or e-learning days, as you call them, here in the past few days. There's, you know, my daughter's in a, she's a sophomore in high school, and she's 15, and I teach at a different school. We do things different. Ours is asynchronous. We throw out, okay, this is what we can. You ask us questions, da, 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 da. My daughter, I would say, unfortunately, has to sit through classes. It's literally just like it was in COVID. It does not. I mean, they get worn out. It is what it is. My question to you then is, how do you encourage the entire learning community to, when my son was here for, he's in college now, but for high school, when COVID hit, he was like, the classroom is now invading my space, right? Like if I'm at home, now, and then he would just shut it down. It was a mindset, right? How do you build that mindset? Do you start early? I mean, I heard great things, design thinking in there that you were talking about, and you know, ideation, which are all parts of that design thinking model and such. How does that kind of evolve? How do you help people understand that this school and learning can be different things, right?
Yeah, and I think for young people, again, it's changing the narrative that they have in their head, right? It's changing right. That experience that, let's face it, I think the greatest portion of children, even if they do well, they don't really like school.
Yeah.
They do it because they have to. They don't do it because they love it. And I think that is heartbreaking as an educator, mm-hmm. right? Like, it should be the Disneyland effect, shouldn't it? Right? Like, it should be the greatest experience, but it isn't. So, you know, we start from a point of view of on the digital, like, what is it that is going to allow us to hook young people in? You know, is it the tools? And yeah, sometimes, right? Like, is it how we teach? So, you know, I, as I said, I have 6-year-olds who know Canva education inside and out and can make a better presentation than I can.
Right.
Is it the project base where they're given the opportunity to collaborate and take roles? Is it the virtual side? So, you know, we can use tech to really address, like, how do we meet kids where they are? How do we introduce things to them that are naturally going to be interesting, so that it's a place that they're willing to come to, you know, willing to switch on, like you say, so that we remove that this is an invasion of my space and I don't mm-hmm. want to go. Because school refusals, certainly here, absenteeism is off the charts. I'm sure the same metrics are coming. So again, like, really understanding, like, what is the psychology behind that? Because a solution that we put in place that actually doesn't address, like, what is churning that mindset in young people, it's not going to work. So we start with that. We also, you know, again, we work with our students. We don't tell them, like, I'm telling you this because it's the way. Like, we really try to engage children on a deeper level. So one of the posts that points I made was around, like, the sustainable development goals. So young people, you know, the next gen, they do really care. And we believe that actually, if you can equip kids with access to platforms or tools, and then make space and time to enable them to develop their voice, through their passions, like incredible, incredible things to happen. And when you can move and make time in your curriculum to drive some of this mindset, you see incredible things happen. You know, and the thing about the school, I always say, like, we always invite people in. So the number one thing is hear from the kids. You know, we put a lot of YouTube out, they create, because that's the first hook for adults. Oh, whoa, that's had this impact on a young person. Wow, what are they doing? So inviting people in to see. And I mean, we are so lucky that I have a laboratory school. You know, we keep it small, intentionally, we incubate practice, we can turn and scale practice really quickly. So if I said to you, not even, it was the 18th of December, we decided to make space and pull esports straight into our curriculum. And that's everything from teacher training to what platform to, you know, how are we going to make it fit? And we just did. And like, that's up and running. We can iterate things. Why? Because the kids were telling us that this was a thing they were very interested in, and we're watching what's happening in the global space. And we think that's a great pathway for young people, right? They're already there. So the laboratory school allows us to iterate, but it also allows people to come and see for yourself, right? So we have done with global school groups, with friends and connections, obviously with the inspection, and the willingness to like open up and say, look, come and see how this feels, like hear it from the people. And then groups or schools, educators will usually pull the gem or things that they resonate with that will work in their environment. Because even in one school board, schools are different from one place to another, right? And we need to honor that, because that's part of our culture, that's part of our demographic. But how can you make small incremental changes based on practice that you see and iterate it quite quickly? Because I believe once you begin knocking over the dominoes, they all start to go really, really quickly, you know? And that's why for us, we've never really worried about scale. You know, we grow in lots of ways because we work with global school groups. We work with the government here around alternative provision. I have in 4 years, never, maybe 5 pounds, really have to pay anything to recruit a teacher, any subject, any level, because they desperately want to stay in education, but they want something else. They want more freedom, more flexibility. They want to get back to doing what it is. Or they want to travel where they teach, you know? So we're happy to showcase that, because seeing is believing, right? Being able to see best practice or see this practice incubated and allow it to kind of create questions, which is where our Disrupt Ed conference came from, right? We talked a lot about it. And I just decided, actually, let's bring some incredible people in a room at the Battersea Power Station, which is quite iconic in itself. You know, I always think it's like education. It was industrial, sat derelict, you know, and now it's been modernized into this incredible place. And we bring people together. And I think that is how you can begin the story. You know, find your people, find your communities, listen to the podcast, reach out to them. It's another point on the list, isn't it?
Yeah.
And allow this practice to begin to move, because actually that's what great education has always done, hasn't it? It's found, started with storytelling or finding ways of teaching, you know, it's that mirroring and facilitation, that coaching mentality. And like, that is what I love about this education community, is that is growing, and it's growing because we as educators care so much that we're not just going to let this continue the way it is, you know? So it's like a rebellion from within, which I love.
Well, we like the disrupting and the rebelling and throwing out the rule book. And yeah, you have to. And when you were talking, you know, the more people we talk to and we hear about their unique approaches to disrupting education and the way they're tackling it, oftentimes they are different routes because they are based in different communities. And to your point of that, it really does have to work with where you're at and the power of like a local community and scaling that. But sometimes, you know, you can be so entrenched in a system, right? That, you know, you talk about like in order to disrupt education, you have to touch kind of all spheres, which can feel like, okay, well then what does that mean? Where do I start? And for those listening, you know, what would you kind of encourage as a starting point, or, you know, like for a school district or a community member or a parent or somebody, like there are certainly different levels you could start at, depending on, you know, if you are a school district that wants to throw out the rule book versus you're an individual you know, you want to think about homeschooling your kids and whatnot, but like, what would be some kind of encouraging starting points for people who want to kind of have a different school experience? Because it seems like yours was, you know, it stemmed from the pandemic and has grown organically, but sometimes it's hard of like, okay, well, where do I start? What would you say?
Oh, and I think it's so good. It's interesting. I'm going to give away a secret for like what I'm going to do when we launch Disrupted, because I don't normally speak, which is interesting at that conference, right? It's a collaboration of other people. But I always say, like, if you were in your team, and it's a really good thing either to do like as a teacher yourself, or as a school team or a leadership team or a superintendent, you know, sit down and take out 6 Lego bricks, you know, Lego bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And actually identify, like, if we were to say, here are 6 bricks. Here are the 6 bricks for education that matter most. Staffing is probably on there, teachers. Tools is probably another one, right? Curriculum is another one. But like, you decide, because actually, if I once attended an incredible Lego workshop years and years and years ago, and my late father was actually a Lego serious play. And what you don't realize is with like 6 bricks, like you can make over 915 million different combinations, I promise you. And like that should be, right? You don't have to have that many pieces to mobilize to have an incredibly wide and varied experience that is like on your horizon. And so if you start with the 6, what you'll be able to do is decide, which ones are we going to play with first? Which ones are we going to build? Which ones are going to be our foundation? And then you build off of there. And the nice thing is, as soon as you start building with your bricks that you've defined, you know, and your team, if you don't like the way it's going, you can just rearrange the bricks and make something different, right? So it doesn't have to be an overnight complete, you know, 360 change, and we're going to stop that school and build another one. For some it is, you know, for some it's that bad that is a better option. But actually you can start small, and it's like the ripple effect. You know, a good friend of mine, David Harkin, who is, you know, 8 billion ideas. If you don't know who David is, look him up. He's amazing, but he has a book about the ripple effect. And sometimes starting small, but starting today, actually makes the biggest and most meaningful wave. So the Lego is a great one, you know, a shout out to them. But it's a great one to role play, and you can do it yourself. Like we all have kids, we all have Lego. Like, sit down and work out, like, I'm a classroom teacher. What are the 6 bricks that are going to matter most to my kids and to me, right? And begin to build, right? Because you will be surprised by just what can happen. And so if you look it up, 915 million. Back in 1958, they thought there was only 102 million combinations, but obviously, you know, science and tech has helped actually realize that there are many, many, many more. So it's a great like analogy that you can pick up and try today, you know, in your everyday life, which I think is great.
I remember we did an EF tour into Switzerland and Davos, and I was lucky enough to hear Sir Ken Robinson speak, which a lot of the awesome conversations you are actually doing a lot of, like, in the element and the books that you know, he's put out. I do remember there was a Lego aspect to it. This was probably 10 years ago. But that, yeah, totally. I love that analogy. You know, and I think, you know, one of the biggest Legos pieces of what the foundation is, and you've made this very evident, is the people, the educators. I, listening between the lines to these amazing like conversations that we're having right now, I can hear, and I think our buddy Don Wetrick said it as well, Ellie, is like, let's start giving the power to localized educators who have these dreams, right? I mean, underneath this, and when we're looking at, you know, going back to the list that you wrote, like, it is about the people. There's a lot of interesting things that I can see mirroring in our general, like, kind of society, at least here in the States. Maybe you can, you know, enlighten us about the UK and in Europe and whatnot. Is the influencer is going away, right? Like, and you kind of hit on it in the list as well. Like, the influencer, this is going to work for everybody. And what you are speaking out about is a very kind of like Plato-ish, like we can change things and morph things, or a clay model. I absolutely love that. You also talk a little bit about in the list, which I really like. You know, I work with an ed tech company that is founder based, education based as well. It's Spikeview, but they are, you know, is VC, you know, they can see that as well. And there's a heavy conversation about that. And the over, what do you see? How do how do you work with schools, and or you don't give the answer, you give, here's how you can do it for your community. Do you, number one, do you see like that kind of influencer kind of going away in the UK as well? Because we have students right now, those alphas are wearing shirts of like, I am not influenced, you know, like they're actually saying it. And you see like, you know, there's a lot of educational influencers out there, and some people I know that are great, but they're sometimes too traditional still. Can you kind of go through like when you go to a conference like this, like and you put the Legos out in front, what are the main takeaways that you want people to take away from a conference like that? And maybe one or two things that you've seen, you know, with people taking their ideas and then putting it into their community.
So I think the first point, something that came to mind, and it actually came from the Hershing report out of what's been happening in some US states, which I think is a really interesting point about empowering people, right? Mm-hmm. Giving the power back, is there's a whole decentralized administration movement happening. And I picked up on it, which was interesting, which was actually getting rid of school principals. Mm. But actually, you're not leaving a vacuum, because what you're doing is you're empowering your teachers, you know, and your leaders of learning to step into having ownership of how decisions are made rather than this hierarchy. So actually, I read that last year and I thought it really resonated. So we brought it in. I actually don't lead the school whatsoever. You know, I sit on the other side and we have a leadership team. So we've collapsed that team. All of our kind of leaders of learning. And it's funny because here we don't call them principals. We call them head teachers. And I think, but shouldn't a head be the best teacher? And that's not always the case. Sometimes they don't teach. So we kind of collapse this. And what's happened is because we didn't have fear of what would happen if we empowered the people that are actually the best leaders at the front of the blackboard jungle, right? We just collapsed the ivory tower. There's been some incredible ideas that are incubated, that are supported by wider staff, because everybody's on the same page. Everybody's understanding what the mandate here is, what the pressures are, what the challenges are. And, you know, it's like a one team movement. And that's really, really interesting. And, you know, some schools say, oh, how do I do that? And I say, well, you know, we're lucky. I told you, laboratory school, we could incubate it in-house, but it didn't happen overnight. You know, we spent 6 months planning how this was going to work and how that piece was going to come together. You know, so leadership for us is a Lego brick that we play with, right? So how we work with others is, you know, the first thing about the conference, it's an unconference. It's about as unconference as you can get, right? Like we use venues which are not, you know, sometimes is it Great Gatsby meets a speakeasy meets a poetry slam? I don't know. You know, we use these really incredible places where you would love to go with your friends, right? To sit, have a coffee, have some catch up, have some good food. And like, so that's the mandate that we've brought, because when educators come, whether you're an educator, leader, founder, and you engage in that environment, you make much, much deeper connections, you know? So that's the first thing that we did. And then, you know, all the people that came are people actually incubating these real things in their real lives. It's not theoretical like you see on the circuit. You know, I've been to so many conferences across and you hear the same person talking about the same thing. And actually, if you know anything about that topic, you think, oh, when's the last time you even tried this? Yep. Never, you know. And on LinkedIn, it's huge like that, isn't it? Like people can help get AI to help them iterate something, but they don't really know what they're talking about. And they certainly have never tried it. So when I work with schools, you know, it's more about facilitation of, all right, you decide, like, here are the bricks. And this is why it's such a great use case, right? Like for your place, like, what are these bricks? Like, what are the things that you think? Is it tech? Is it AI? For a lot of schools, it isn't. They're not ready for it, right? Like they have to solve other challenges first. And then it's a case of beginning to play or facilitating them so that they begin to put these pieces together to create the picture that they're aiming to achieve, you know. And when you do that, it's like, you know, you move the pieces around on the game board, don't you? You inspire conversation. You inspire, well, what if we tried that? Like innovative thinking, which is that out of the box. And I have a really great friend. I don't know if you know him, but it's Dan Fitzpatrick, who's the AI educator. Mm-hmm. You know, he is incredible, but he talks about this third box in education. And it's that willingness, even though it's scary, even though it's new, even though for educators, it may, or leaders, it may feel a little bit out of control, But that is where you develop the biggest amount of progress, is when you step forward into that place of change and bring your students with you. Because the students, you know, I always just find it as, you know, we're the digital dinosaurs. You know, we just are. Like, we're cool ones, like to say, but, you know, they don't even just think digitally, they think spatially. So whatever you think you can do on tech, they're going to iterate it faster. And isn't it our job, even if we don't understand it, to focus more on the how are we going to do this? We focus too much on the why, right? So nothing happens and the kids are using it anyways. But if we focus on the how and we apply our adult knowledge and, you know, our life experience to help them navigate the challenges, the safety risks, so that they use these tools ethically and effectively, isn't that a better way to approach it? And I think that's that third box. So I don't ever go in saying, oh, it has to be this way. Of course, I can show you the way that we've incubated, but what does that mean to you? Like, how does that fit within your unique circumstances? And in many cases, people take a piece of it and then make it something even more incredible, because it matters to them and it matters to their schools and it matters to the students, you know, that they're working with. So that's, you know, how I like to approach things, rather than, you know, I'm the fountain of all knowledge. I'm certainly not. We know what we know in our environment. But the other thing is, I don't talk about things that I'm not prepared to show you or already incubating, you know, where you can see that real sense of experience and impact, you know, an impact on who, first and foremost, the students, but actually then impact on the educators that work with us or that we support.
I love that. That's amazing. So we're coming up on the end of our time. Are we missing anything? Like, I will ask Allie her final thoughts here, but where are you going into 2024 outside of just sandboxing it, which I absolutely love? I can't, you know, I'm gonna ask you, are you hiring? That's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, we do, of course. You know, we're growing, we're hiring. The global reach is interesting. A couple of things I think are fast coming. You know, watch what's happening in sports. And that might be weird, you know. I mean, I played sports growing up, but I think there's a huge driver, certainly in the US, but globally, around youth sport development. Now, that's only going to happen if we sidestep and realize that education doesn't normally serve athletes very, very well, right? Like, it's always been one or the other. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is there's so much that young people can gain from a sport coaching mentality. Yeah. They may not ever be the best swimmer or track runner, but actually sport is so much more. And if we approach education in a way like, you know, the best youth coaches would, this is all about development of all sides, isn't it? It's development of your mental capacity. It's development of your grit, your leadership, your teamwork. And I think actually I'm starting to see that showing up a little bit on the horizon with some of the projects that we're being asked to get involved in around the hybrid mandate that meets those needs. So that's one. Obviously, you know, the emerging tech story is going to continue to dominate. I actually think what you're going to see is a quietening down of the vaporware that emerged with this rise of AI. Let's use that in scale, because a lot of it actually doesn't solve the problems that we have in the classroom. And what we need to do is find ways that AI and tech actually enhance the way we deliver our pedagogy and enhance the way we're able to connect with young people and enable them to create, which is why esports is so fascinating too, because that's a lot around the creator's economy, not just gaming. It's not just playing, is it? So I think we're going to see more of that. AI is not replacing teachers. You know, my hope is that it allows us to incubate high quality experiences that either help non-educators facilitate learning, because that is going to be an emerging story. It is in lots of, you know, low-income countries around the world. But I think even, you know, where you hear in the US, whether it's true, is that bus drivers are being asked to come in as part of the workforce and support lessons, right? AI can help facilitate that. And I think there's even some examples where I see some kind of alternative schools where there's no teachers at all, but they're, you know, big executives that have come in to drive and share their knowledge. So I think we're going to see more of this. Watch out. Elon Musk is on the move, isn't he, in Texas, coming up with some things. So, you know, but again, like find its purpose, you know, find its purpose, because oftentimes these things don't replace. So, you know, those are there. And I think the, again, and I'm so fortunate, because I've Love doing some work with the George Lucas Foundation, who have done a lot around research and project-based learning. Project-based, inquiry-based, quest-based, whatever you want to call it, is a fundamental way of actually going deep in the curriculum, you know, not just skating across the knives, not just like turning over worksheets, allowing kids to actually develop skills for life, develop skills that will help set them up for success, drive all of your learning outcomes through. And obviously, you know, GLEF have been promoting that with Edutopia for a long time, but I know there's some exciting things happening from George Lucas and his team on simulation-based learning, you know, so I think we're going to start to see some of that coming, that, you know, their driver is that it's free and it's accessible, you know, to young people around the world. So some incredible stuff coming to actually re-energize, you know, our educators so that they can deliver fantastic learning outcomes for young people, whether that's in person, whether that's online, you know, or hybrid, a bit of both. And I think that's fantastic.
Love that. Love that.
Yeah.
Allie, there's a lot in here. Obviously, our next podcast will be unpacking Melissa's ideas here and such. But what are your final thoughts on this one?
I mean, I think underlying all of this is sometimes from the educator side, you know, you can feel, and I've felt that, the growing sense of being almost this digital dinosaur, despite the fact, like, I feel kind of called out, but at the same time, like, in reflecting what you've said, it's like my relationship with technology and going through the pandemic does have effects on educators and the way we approach the classroom. But we need to look at it from like a holistic point of view of restarting that. And there are opportunities where it doesn't have to be just school online, like mimicking what it was in person, that there is this great opportunity for tech tools and for local community members to dive into a totally different way to do school. And I would encourage anybody listening to this, because I feel like we just scratched the surface on your kind of laboratory school model.
Oh,
I mean, there's so much power there. And I think it's, we've had micro schools and people who are doing this small network cohorts and whatnot. And I think if you are looking to make a change, that it can be faster than you think, and there are comparable people such as Melissa doing that work to connect with. So I was very encouraged and hopeful that, despite maybe my sentiments or current sentiments that I'm experiencing with technology, that there are new ways to integrate it and innovate and have it be really, really impactful for the learning community and for our students.
Right. Definitely, Melissa, you have a growth mindset, and that is something that we're looking for in a lot of educators, or we're trying to help burnt out people try to reignite their passion. Yes. We will post the link to the actual post for people to read, but how else can people connect with you and then see what you're doing and some really good assets for them to kind of connect?
Yeah, so LinkedIn is kind of my go-to place. I think it's a wonderful place to build a community. So you can reach out to me there. So, you know, Sophia High School lives and breathes. We do open the school up digitally, of course, for teams that want to come in. And that's something that we really cherish doing, right? Like when we can share, or the students can share their story and their experience, you know, that really, really resonates and it hits home. And that doesn't matter whether they're a parent or a school leader or an executive of the global school group, you know, that impact is really, really felt. So those are the best ways. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I would say that the last thing I would say to do is, if you really want to know what education needs to look like, get those bricks and do it with the kids in your classroom, because they will actually open your eyes and your minds to things that they're thinking about, you know, and it is for them, right? That's why we do what we do. It really isn't for us, but it's a fantastic exercise. And so if you've done that, post back, you know, I actually have another post going out with the Lego bricks on the table. So for those that are listening, you're going to get a sneak peek as to what's coming, but it's a fantastic way to begin your journey, you know, and see where you go.
Fantastic. And don't forget the Disrupt Ed podcast as well, correct? You have the podcast.
Yes, we do. Yeah. We do an event here in London. It's the second one we've done. We do take it on the road. We are taking it on the road. So we've got one coming that will be announced in Dubai. And obviously I'm having some requests from the other side of the pond, which is lovely.
Come on over.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we do that. And then, you know, we do jump on and do, you know, LinkedIn audio lives and things like that. I think the more conversation that we can have and bring educators to a place where they feel like they're connected with their people, like there's no judgments, that actually the things that are being talked about and the ideas are actually, you know, practical opportunities to put into place in the classroom. You know, it becomes a safe place to incubate the innovation that we know, you know, our children so desperately need. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you for posting.
Pleasure. Yeah.
The 2024, the spicy post, that opened up a lot of doors for us. Melissa, again, thank you for taking time out in the evening there in the UK to chat with us today on the Disrupt Education podcast. So for Ali Privet, I'm Peter Hostrasser. This has been a great one. Our next podcast, Ali and I will unpack this a little bit further. Stay tuned to that. Again, thank you all for hanging out with us. If you haven't subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. We'll talk to you next time on the Disrupt Education Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of the Disrupt Education Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Are you ready to disrupt the educational arena you're a part of? For more ways to get involved in the work we do here at Disrupt Education, check us out at disrupteducation.co or find us on LinkedIn at Peter Hostrasser or Ali Privet.
Our mission here is to help facilitate and amplify changes in the educational system through local initiatives and help you scale them into community movements. Our building network of disruptors in education are working to move beyond scores and grades as the only measure for student learning. If your school district, college campus, or organization is looking for facilitators of this work, reach out on our website or social media.
And if you have any thoughts or feedback on this week's episode or any episode, we'd love to hear from you. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries, taking risks, and most importantly, disrupting education.